Thanks, Nathan. Good morning, everybody, on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Today, we continue our series of conversations with people who have announced their intention to run for mayor of Baltimore. There will be 13 Democratic candidates on the April 26 primary ballot. Five candidates have also registered to be on the Republican primary ballot. Three Green Party candidates, one Libertarian, two Independents, and five candidates who are not affiliated with any party will appear on the general election ballot in November. So we're spending every Wednesday here on Maryland Morning speaking with candidates about their vision for the city. Today, my guest is City Councilman Carl Stokes. He's a Democrat. He is 65 years old. He lives in Greater Green Mountain. He's the father of two daughters. He was first elected to the City Council in 1987. He served for 8 years, and when he left the council in 1995, he was appointed to serve on the Baltimore City School Board. He worked as the vice president of a medical equipment and supplies company, and he was the chief operating officer of the Bluford Drew Jemison STEM Academy. That's a public charter middle school for boys, which he co-founded in 2006 in East Baltimore. Prior to that, he had owned a chain of men's clothing stores. In 2010, when Stephanie Rawlings Blake became mayor following Sheila Dixon's resignation, Jack Young's councilmanic seat in District 12 became open when Mr. Young was appointed city council president. Carl Stokes was appointed to Mr. Young's seat to represent District 12. He currently serves as the chair of the Taxation, Finance, and Economic Development Committee. He is giving up that seat to run for mayor, an office he also ran for in 1999 and again in 2011. Carl Stokes, always good to see you. Good morning.
Great to see you. How are you feeling, Tom?
I'm feeling just great.
Good,
and,
good, good.
You know, you got to be feeling pretty good, too, because this is a very high-energy campaign.
It is a high-energy campaign. I'm really glad that it is. It's great for the city. It's great for democracy. It should lead to a bigger, better, stronger, more prosperous city.
Yeah. What do you think is different this time around? I mean, you ran in 1999. Martin O'Malley was the ultimate winner in that race. 2011, you were on the ballot, decided to remove yourself from the ballot before the election.
Right.
Stephanie Rawlings Blake won that election. What's different this time around for you?
For me, the difference is, I think, and hope that the shift of the mindset of the people are. I remember running in 15, 16 years ago in 1999 when people were concerned about crime and violence in our city. Homicide rate was high. It's even higher now. But at that time, people were saying, what are you going to do about public safety, Carl? That's the most important thing. And I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to educate our children because we're not doing a very good job about that now. And then we're going to work and make sure that people have jobs that pay a decent wage, sustainable, that we're going to take people off of corners and we're going to get people into employment. We're going to do job training. We're going to work with unions. We're going to work with nonprofits and contractors, and we're going to get people working. And then we're going to make sure that we have good treatment for people who have addictions in our city of Baltimore. And that's going to lower crime significantly. Well, Martin O'Malley said, you know what? Can't do any of that until we lock up as many people as we can. And so when Martin and the people said, that's what we need. We need to lock them up. We just need to lock them up. Stokes, you're dreaming. Educate children? I don't think that's right. After school programs? That can wait. Get people jobs? That can wait. First, we need to lock up all the criminals and hoodlums and thugs that are running around our city. Well, for 4 years in a row, we locked up over 100,000 young African-American men in the city of Baltimore. Over 100,000 young African-American men in the city of Baltimore. You see how that worked out? Not so well. And now people are saying, Carl, why did we do that? Why did we go down that road? Can you make a difference this time? Can we all make a better difference? Can we now turn our attention to saving our young people in this town? Can we make sure that there's an education and after-school activities for our young people? Can we help folk get into jobs that are paying a sustainable wage? Can we now work to change our communities? Can we put our resources into infrastructure, planting trees, as simple as planting trees in our city? I think what's different now, Tom, is people realize that that strategy of simply locking up people, just doing that, was a very stupid and, frankly, immoral strategy. We have ruined thousands of people's lives in our town.
And what's also different in this election, in the year 2016, is that we've had a huge upset and unrest, and we had a riot in April.
Right.
That was, in many people's minds, you know, a sort of expression and a manifestation of people's despair, people's hopelessness, people's lack of faith, and certainly lack of trust in the criminal justice system and in the police department in particular. Now, let's say that it did in fact emanate from the late 90s with Mr. O'Malley's, you know, high enforcement, high incarceration approach to policing. How do you turn that clock back? How do you fix what is clearly a very troubled, intense relationship between law enforcement and people of color in this community?
You know, I don't think that it is simply about police, frankly. I was on the corner of Penn and North 2 days after the CVS burning in late April, early May. And I was with a CNN reporter who's walking around with me. And the reporter looked at 7 or 8 blocks of abandoned boarded up housing around Penn North and a little beyond. And she said to me, "Councilman, that riot really tore up this neighborhood, didn't it?" And I said, "Will you look again? Would you look again? Do those boards look like they were put up yesterday?" No. The riot did not tear up this neighborhood. The conditions, the neglect, the hopelessness that is in this neighborhood caused an uprising, as it should have, as it should have. So what I'm saying, Tom, is that at least 3 administrations of neglect of these communities, maybe longer, have caused this break that we talk about. It's not just a break between community and police. Actually, I think the community respect and support the greater majority of the police force. But the community knows that there are 100.5, 200, 300 officers who are bad, corrupt, bad. You know, and so what people are most upset about are not the majority of police officers in our town. They want the police in their communities. They're mad that we have not removed the bad cops from their midst of the community and the other officers. That's what they're angry about. They see their sons and daughters being taken away to jail for committing no crimes, and we see some officers, a very small number, getting away, they would say literally, with murder.
Let me make sure I understand what you're saying in a statement you just made, that the unrest and the riots happened as they should have.
Right.
What do you mean?
I mean, if people have a generation or more of total neglect of their communities, the allowing of abandonment, worst schools almost in the country, although Maryland has been rated number one in education by some publications, we know that in Baltimore City, for example, 89% of our fourth graders are at below proficiency for reading and math, 89%. We can change that next year, by the way, and I want to talk about solutions. I don't want to just talk about what the problems are. I'd love to talk about solutions.
Councilman, there are a lot of problems, I know, but the correct posture, the correct response to those problems,
right,
it can't be a riot. I mean, as
Tom, and I may get in trouble on the airs, but Martin Luther King said a riot is the speech of those who have no voice. It still is. I don't care if you're black, white, Latino. If you're allowed to wallow, you know, 25% of the city's in poverty, 44% of 44% of black children in the city of Baltimore live in poverty, which means their families live in poverty. So obviously, the African-American community is very much impoverished in the city, which is not to say that whites and Latinos are not a part of that, but obviously a great super minority are African-Americans in this town. And so, yeah, Tom, I am going to challenge you back on that. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people have to express themselves because what is quote-unquote legitimate in this town of going about justice is not working for them. And so they have to have an uprising, if you want to use the word riot, to get their voices heard. Sometimes that just has to happen.
And to what extent does the political leadership of the city have accountability for that and responsibility for that? And by that I mean, when Sheila Dixon was on this show a few weeks ago and last night at the mayoral's forum at the Belvedere, she said the riots wouldn't have happened if she had been the mayor. Now, who knows?
Yeah, but as I looked at these neighborhoods that were neglected, they happened under her administration.
That's exactly right. So, and you were on the council off and on during the times that these.
Actually, I wasn't here for the last three administrations. I've been out for 15 years. So,
but you've been on for the last five.
I've been back for the last five.
Yeah.
And if you notice, I've been the guy in City Hall fighting against what is obviously an incorrect direction for us to go. I'm the guy who stood up and said, we need to audit every penny of the taxpayer money. I led that fight. I'm the guy who said, you know, we ought to stop giving billionaire developers tax breaks, and while everybody else has to pay a water bill that's triple what it was 9 years ago, and we have to pay our full freight on property taxes. Meanwhile, we give a billionaire developer 30 years of free property tax, 30 years free. And we don't have money enough for schools, for after-school programs. It's not right. And so, yeah, I've been back for 5 years, thank God. I know that's a little less modest than I should be. But, yeah, I'm glad that I am back for the last 5 years.
All right, and you're going to do us a favor and hold on. We're going to be back right after a break for the news, and we will continue this very spirited conversation. Councilman Carl Stokes, one of 13 Democrats running in the April 26th primary for mayor of the city of Baltimore. There are 29 candidates overall for that office. We'll have more with Carl Stokes after a break for the news. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Here's Nathan.
Thanks, Tom. You're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast, a service of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. Find more podcasts at WYPR.org and tell us what you think by email, mdmorning@WYPR.org. Now, back to the podcast.
On 88.1, welcome back. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Today, we're continuing our weekly series of conversations with candidates for mayor of the city of Baltimore. This morning, Democratic candidate Carl Stokes joins me. His resume in local political office goes back to 1987, when he was first elected to the Baltimore City Council, on which he served for 8 years. And after a 15-year hiatus from the council, during which he was in private business, served on the Baltimore School Board, co-founded a charter school, and ran for mayor. In 2010, he was appointed to fill the seat of Jack Young in District 12 when Mr. Young became city council president. Mr. Stokes is relinquishing his city council seat in order to run in the April 26th Democratic mayoral primary. Councilman, as a point of reference for voters, can you describe how your administration would be a departure from the current administration of Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, or for that matter, a big departure from any of the other many people running for the office?
Yes. First of all, the city would work and run better than it runs from a business governmental standpoint. When I came back to the city council 5 years ago and I wanted to know why we were going to close 15 rec centers and six pools and cut the hours of everything else, and I went over to the Department of Rec and Parks and said, let's go through the books together. Let's see if we can find some money to keep things running here and at maximum. And first, they had no books. They had no financials. And I asked them, well, let me see your last 3 years of audits. They said, we don't do audits here. I said, what do you mean you don't do audits? They said, we don't do audits, councilman. And so when I discovered we didn't do audits, I demanded that we do an audit of Rec and Parks, that we not close anything. And we were able to stave off that first year, any closure of those 15 centers, six pools, cutting the hours, et cetera. We were able to stave them off because people said, well, yeah, that makes sense. Let's do an audit of the books and let's see what we got. And you know, it took 4 years, by the way, to get an audit of Rec and Parks. And then I found that everybody else didn't do audits either around the city, pretty much the departments, and I put in a piece of legislation that says let's audit all the records and all of the finances and all of the performances of all the departments that haven't done so for about three decades, for about 30 years.
You were one of the first people in this race to bring up this issue of audits.
Right. Well, I was the first guy to call for the audits. I couldn't believe it. Here I am 5 years back on the council, no audits.
The mayor has said that, for example, this year there is a $75 million shortfall for the next fiscal year. Do you trust that number? If we're not auditing the
right
departments, how do we know?
Nobody knows what the budget is. Nobody knows what the real numbers are. Every year, people come to us from the different departments, us being the city council, and they say, here's my budget for the next year. And it's not based on any real number at all, because they did not keep financials this past year. They don't even know what they're doing performance-wise. The Department of Transportation comes to us and says, you know what? We filled 1,000 potholes this past year. Next year, we're going to fill 1,200. Well, we did an audit of their performance in Department of Transportation. Here's what we found out. They have no records of performances. In other words, they can't tell you who filled the pothole, what day the pothole was filled, or where the pothole was filled. So they don't keep records, not only financially, but on just the work.
How long would something like that take? If you were to take office in January of 2017, how long then would it take you to have a handle on where the money was?
Within 12 months.
From now until then, we're talking like two years of not actually knowing what the numbers of the city are?
But every month we would know something about some departments. I said within 12 months because we got to get in there and we got to do all of the departments. And Tom, they don't keep books. In other words, the auditors have really nothing to audit. So the first thing that has to happen is we have to go through department by department and do financial management within each department and set up a set of books that from that point on will be kept going forward. And then we can audit those books. But I'm not going to wait the whole year. I'm going to get started right away. And the fact that I was able to author legislation to start that means that that is happening right now. Right now, all of the departments are supposed to be audited by December of this year. I don't know if we're going to get there because things are so far behind, but I know that right now, because of the legislation that I've authored, we are starting that process.
Outside auditing firm or the city audit department?
Both. The outside auditors are doing most of the agencies. The comptroller's office, Department of Audits, are doing two or three of the departments.
Because there is a Department of Audits. You got to wonder what
they're
doing.
There is a Department of Audits.
They haven't been auditing the books for the last 30 years. What does the Department of Audits actually do?
Well, they do some larger audits, and they do audits when there are special requests for audits. But as a routine matter, they're not auditing the individual departments on a biannual or annual basis.
Councilman Carl Stokes is my guest on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. He is one of 13 Democratic candidates for the office of mayor of City of Baltimore. Let's talk about a few of the ideas that you've released in your plan for Baltimore.
Sure.
One is you call for a new kind of TIF,
tax increment financing.
What would be different about the TIFs in a Stokes administration than right now?
What we do now with these TIFs, in other words, a TIF is the city's willingness to give a developer a tax break. Usually they last 20 or 30 years. It means that if they have this tax increment financing, the developer, they can go to the bond market and they could sell bonds so that they could put into the construction of their project. Big part of it, most of it is supposed to go to infrastructure, to the building of streets and sidewalks and the laying of underground pipes and conduits, et cetera. Which in the old days, the city would simply write a check in its Department of Public Works and they would do the work themselves. Now the city is saying the developer must do it, and the developer is saying, in some cases, I don't have enough to do it. Although all of the little guys, all of the small projects around the city, they don't get TIFs. They don't get tax increment financing. They do their own infrastructure work and they pay for it. It's only the billionaire developers and just a handful, two or three, who come into the city and demand that they won't build a project in the city unless they receive this public financing. What will happen differently? There will still be some public finance subsidies for some projects, but only projects that benefit the greater community, the distressed communities, the most vulnerable communities around town. And if we build something in a community that's not distressed, they must, as we've just done with the University of Maryland Biopark, they must work in agreement with the community surrounding that. In this case, it's Poppleton. I'm sorry, Poe Homes and Pigtown. So, money.
The University of Maryland.
University
down,
of Maryland now is going side, right. to, with its developer, give cash to the community outside of its boundaries, so that that community is able to determine what its needs are to build public park spaces, to build playgrounds, to help with the school system, the school that in its community, to help small businesses in the community. And so
you're requiring them to help out distressed communities in return for helping them out
absolutely.
With their big project.
Absolutely.
Perhaps the University of Maryland is a sui generis kind of thing, a unique situation if we have one of these, as you say, billionaire developers.
Right.
If that billionaire developer is shopping around a bunch of different cities in which to locate
right.
his or her business, why then would, if you're going to make the pot less sweet
right.
for a billionaire development, what's to say that we're not going to lose that business altogether?
Don't come. I say things because I believe them. Don't come. If your big project is only going to take from the community, don't come. I only want projects that are going to add value to our community. If we, Mrs. Jones, who's on a pension, or Mr. Jack, who has a Social Security check, is going to pay full freight for his property taxes and the water bill, and he now has to subsidize a billionaire who doesn't want to pay any taxes, don't come. I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
On 88.1, Carl Stokes is my guest. He's a Democratic candidate for the office of mayor of City of Baltimore. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Let's talk about education.
Okay.
You talked about it as we began our conversation this morning about how that was an approach that you suggested back in 1999 as a way of stemming the tide of crime, et cetera. But in your plan, which is a very full and long plan, the last two paragraphs
right.
concern education and public safety. And they're the shortest parts of the plan.
Right.
So tell me what you think right. our education policy should be and what a mayor can do
okay.
to affect the performance of the Baltimore City schools, given the fact that the city does not retain complete control over the school system.
I think the mayor has complete control of the school system. I think the mayor has accountability and responsibility for the school system. I know that there's this 1997 agreement that says that there's a state-city partnership. I served on the first school board that was put into place in 1997 as a part of this partnership. But let me mention that though the mayor and governor have joint responsibility to appoint persons to the school board, in fact, in practice, the mayor has appointed every member of the school board since 1997 with the consent of the governor. The governor has never vetoed any mayoral appointment to the Baltimore City School Board. It is an agreement, it is an understanding that the mayor will be appointing those persons to the school board.
So, other candidates have suggested that we need to wrestle control of the school system back from the state. Are you saying that that's not necessary, that as a matter of practicality,
right.
we already have that?
We already have that. The city gives 11% of its budget to public schools, 11%. Every other jurisdiction in the state of Maryland gives 35% to 65% of its operating budget to its schools. Baltimore has thrown up its hands around its own children. It gives 11% of its budget to schools. In the first 4 years of mayor, I will increase that to at least 30% of the budget.
And what do we spend it on? What do we spend it on? School all of a sudden gets this big infusion of new money. What do you spend it on?
We reduce class sizes. We add educators in some classrooms, a second educator, particularly in math and English language arts. We bring in mental health folk. These kids come from traumatic neighborhoods. There's no doubt about that. We bring in general health. We expand the school day so that every child has an opportunity to have an after-school experience, and that might be banned, and I think all kids should get full art immersions in our schools. I see that they should be building robots, that they should be in debate clubs, that they should be in chess clubs, that they should be learning how to code. Every eighth grader should learn how to code. There are right now 20,000 jobs in the Baltimore area for people who are program computer coders. 20,000 jobs. Those jobs start at $30,000 and $50,000, depending on whether you're an apprentice or a permanent full-time person. I think we spend the money on youth. We spend the money on schools and education. And that's where we put our first dollar. That's where our first dollar should come. We come off the top of the budget. Here's 30%. in the first 4 years, I think at some point we increase it even more. We will see the public safety dollars go down in direct relationship to how much we put into improving education and services for young people.
You talk about involving the business community in the education of our kids. You talk about the regulatory environment in the city of Baltimore for business in terms of attracting jobs. You've called for establishing a blue ribbon task force to study the regulations. You have to understand there's a whole lot of voters who think blue ribbon task force.
Yeah, I don't think we
Lord,
need a whole lot of blue ribbon either.
That's kicking the can down the road.
No. I think immediately. I think, again, this starts before I actually sworn into office, because on day one, I'll change the regulatory places that are just an obstacle to businesses. And so this starts immediately. It already has started with me going around the main streets in Baltimore, what we call Main Street business programs, RBLs. We're just trying to figure out quickly which are the most onerous regulations that we have in our city. Besides all of these special fees, you know, we're a city in the 5 years I've been back, I've voted against 16 fees. That's where I wanted to go with that. Mm-hmm. So we've had, you know, we're the only jurisdiction that charges 5 cents more for a bottle of water. You got to pay 5 cents additional tax on a bottle of water in Baltimore City.
All right. And Councilman, that's all we have time for this morning. I appreciate your being here, and we will continue our conversation as this campaign continues to heat up. Thank you so much, Tom. Councilman Carl Stokes, he's a Democratic candidate for mayor of Baltimore City. Every Wednesday here on Maryland Morning, we'll have conversations with the candidates who will be on the April 26th primary election ballot. Next week, we turn our attention to the race for the Democratic nomination for United States Senate. I'll speak with Congresswoman Donna Edwards, and the following week, Congressman Chris Van Hollen. He will join me here in Studio A. There are a number of mayoral and city council forums coming up tonight. The No Boundaries Coalition will host a city council candidates forum for Districts 7, 9, and 11 at St. Peter Claver Church in Sandtown. Next Wednesday, the Open Society Institute and the Baltimore City Paper will host a mayoral forum at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, and I'll be moderating a forum on March 3rd with the mayoral candidates at the National Federation of the Blind. That event is sponsored by the League of Women Voters. We've got a link to all the details at WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up later in the broadcast, a conversation with Dr. Kimberly Goodzoon about what you should look for when you're choosing a weight loss program. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Now, it's time for the Environment in Focus.